Larry, let's start with what has happened to Donald Trump and the information, the new information that you've got. And there is an article in New York Times. It says that its analysis of the bullet trajectories and audio materials provides strong evidence that Donald Trump was hit by a bullet, not
Right.
shrapnel. And
Right.
What's your take? What's your take on the latest information?
There's no evidence he was hit by shrapnel. Christopher Wray is, to put it charitably, a dumbass. As director of the FBI, which is supposedly the premier law enforcement agency in the United States, he's supposed to deal with facts, not speculation. You're too young to remember, perhaps, the TV show Dragnet, but part of the Dragnet line was just the facts, ma'am, just the facts. So the facts is that we heard gunshots and Donald Trump had a wound to his right ear. Now, shrapnel or not, they were firing a goddamn gun at Donald Trump, all right? So why does Christopher Wray want to raise doubts that, oh, he may not have got hit by a bullet? I mean, it's just, I'm sorry for being enraged about this, but that kind of craven stupidity just underscores that Ray is not fit for that job. And on top of it, he further proved his ignorance in his testimony before the House Judiciary Committee when he said, quote, the FBI has recovered 8 cartridges next to the body of the shooter Crooks. Okay, hang on. This is a cartridge. As you can see, has the bullet, the shell casing. See that little silver thing in the middle there? Right up there in the middle, that's called a primer. And inside the shell casing is gunpowder. That's a cartridge, a fully intact round of ammunition. You don't call it a bullet. Ignorant people who have no experience with firearms, yes, they call it a bullet. But that's the bullet, that little copper thing at the end. That is the bullet. The rest of it's not the bullet. This is a cartridge. So when he said, oh, FBI recovered 8 cartridges, I wrote the FBI's Office of Public Affairs and said, what gives? Is Director Wray saying that they recovered 8 intact rounds of unfired ammunition? Or did he misspeak and actually mean to say that they recovered 8 shell casings? Well, the FBI Public Affairs Office, to their credit, without making any commentary about the intellectual vapidity of Director Wray, wrote back and said, oh, it was 8 shell casings. So here we got Wray, who can't even properly identify a piece of ammunition. People say, well, he's not a firearms expert. Well, bullshit. He's the head of the FBI, number one. Number two, he was a U.S. attorney, an assistant U.S. attorney, to be precise, accustomed to presenting evidence in court. When you present evidence in court, you just don't get to make stuff up and pull it out of your rear end. You got to be precise. You got to know what you're talking about. You got to be accurate. He was none of those. So, yeah, I mean, for him to even go there with, oh, I'm not sure Trump was shot. Were shots fired at Donald Trump? Well, yeah. Okay, then, unless you've got evidence that you can point to of actual shrapnel, where did the bullet strike that you're claiming the shrapnel came from? Well, I don't know. Then keep your mouth shut. Sorry, but it pisses me off.
Getting to the conflict in Ukraine, there is a report shows that a large number of mercenaries from France have arrived in Kharkiv region. What's going on right now in Ukraine?
Well, these are allegedly instructors. And last I checked, the Russians hit a target in Odessa the other day on Monday or Tuesday, and then they hit this target in Kharkiv with about 40 more of these instructors, mercenaries, killed them. So Russia's just, bring them on. Bring them in, we'll kill them. The West has no idea what it's doing. because, you know, it's accustomed to fighting little brown people with just AK-47s that can't shoot back with tanks and artillery and combat air. Well, now they're up against an actual, you know, comparable pro, and the West can't handle it.
Do you find it, Donald Trump was talking about Zelensky, called him and talked with him. Do you find Zelensky's willing to negotiate, to find a political settlement?
What option? It's either that or die. Yeah, he's trying to find a political settlement. I don't think there's one to be had. Settlement simple, surrender. Surrender. And yeah, then the Russians will take it under advisement. The Russians they're not suffering. They're not facing political turmoil at home. They're not facing enormous casualties the way Ukraine is facing enormous casualties. And Russia's advancing. They're taking more and more territory every day, every single day. And they're inflicting enormous casualties on the Ukrainians and capturing a large number as well. What's their incentive to negotiate? They have none.
And why the Europeans behind the scene are trying to convince Zelensky not to continue this conflict? Who's forcing Europeans to do that? If they do this by themselves, why are they doing this?
This is, let's call this the era of the Lilliputians. So do you remember the book Gulliver's Travels? And Gulliver, in one situation, is among the giants. And then in another situation, he's tied down by all these Lilliputians. That's what we have in Europe and the United States right now. These tiny little people with tiny little minds, but they're very vicious, very malevolent, very dangerous, but also very stupid and incompetent. They're just such a dangerous mixture. The era of recognizing that, you know, there's a way to negotiate and talk and try to figure out a way to coexist, but that's not what this is about. Europe is wanting to impose its own values, which the values that Europe is now upholding and embracing are destroying it.
Do you consider the chance of Kamala Harris winning 2024 is as same as what Joe Biden had before dropping off?
No. But you're going to be told by the media, oh my God, like today, she's beating Donald Trump in all these polls. This is called gaslighting. These are the same people that 3 weeks ago told us, Joe Biden, man, he's sharp as a tack. You know, Albert Einstein runs in fear of Joe Biden, because Einstein can't even match the intellectual capability of Biden. And we say, well, yeah, that's because Einstein's dead. But okay, if you want to go there, the game show in the United States is very popular, Jeopardy, where people are asked to given answers and have to formulate what the questions were. You know, the first president of the United States. Oh, who was George Washington? Well, that, you know, they won't let Biden play that game because he is so smart and so capable that he would never lose and nobody else would ever get a chance to win. So they want to keep it, you know, there's some interest in the show. So we go from that to, oh my God, Biden's lost his marbles. He can't continue as president. He's not fit. He's not in shape. Whoa, wait a second. He's gone from the greatest to the worst. And again, people saw with their own eyes. It was the media that kept telling, you're not seeing that. You know, it's like that old joke about the woman that comes home, catches her husband in bed with the next door neighbor. And goes, what's going on here? And the husband gets out of bed and is getting dressed. What? There's nothing here. What? What person? I don't see any person. And, you know, just deny, make it up. That's the Democrat strategy. That's what they've done for the last 3.5 years with Joe Biden. That's now what they're going to do with Kamala Harris. But all the spin, all the gaslighting in the world, all the the stories repeated about how smart she is, how capable she is, how personable she is, doesn't obscure the fact that she's a mean, nasty, stupid piece of work. That 94% of the people that went to work for her quit because she was such a total bitch. And let's be clear about that. She's not a nice person, and she's not a smart person. So she can't hide that. You cannot hide that, no matter how many talking points they feed to her. So it will be, people say, oh, but Donald Trump's got trouble running against women. You go, were you folks awake in 2016? He ran against this gal in the pantsuit by the name of Hillary Clinton, seemed to hold his own. In fact, as I recall, he won. So anybody want to make the case that Kamala Harris is a more capable politician than Hillary Clinton? That Kamala Harris is a smarter politician than Hillary Clinton? That Kamala Harris is a smarter person than Hillary Clinton in discussing international relations? Anybody want to make that case? I'll debate you on it, because the answer is no, no, and no.
Do we know what's Kamala's policy in Ukraine if she wins? Let's assume that. Is she talking about it? What would be her policy?
Oh yeah, more cowbell. Yeah, no, they're gonna continue to double down until Ukraine is face down in its field of wheat. This is, the Biden administration really doesn't have any more control over this process. It's playing out on the ground right now with Russian units advancing across the front, particularly in Donetsk and into the Donbass. So they don't have any good options. Ukraine, they can't suddenly produce a good number of troops. And even if they had the weapons, even if the West was in a position to supply the weapons, they still wouldn't have the people trained to use them. And it's not about lack of even manpower or weapons. Russia is outdoing them on every single measure. So, Ukraine's in the same position as somebody just gone to the doctor and been told, sorry to tell you, you got stage 4 liver cancer. You may only have 2 or 3 weeks to live. You may live 3 or 4 months, but you're going to die. So get your affairs in order. That's what Zelensky's doing, talking about the possibility of peace talks.
And what's going on with Le Pen in France? Why she couldn't just avoid the sending of these mercenaries to Ukraine, in your opinion?
Well, it's not Le Pen's decision to send them.
She doesn't have any sort of leverage on the decision?
No. She didn't win the election. She's not prime minister. She doesn't control the defense ministry. That's all Macron. And Macron's doubling down. So, just get some more French soldiers killed. You could see a scenario coming that if he gets enough French soldiers killed, they could be, we could see a coup in France. That would be a thing, wouldn't it? Where the military rises up and says, this is bullshit. We're not going to do this anymore. But the Olympics were set up and designed to promote world peace. Instead, they've become such a political football that now they won't even let Russian athletes compete under a Russian flag. The Israelis are murdering Palestinians, and they allow the Israelis to come in under their flag. So, there's no standard of justice, uniform standard. It's all purely partisan politics. And I think the Russians and other countries are trying to recognize, forget about the Olympics. We'll do our own games. Because why hang out with the West?
Do we know what Trump would do? Because right now they're talking about Trump's going to give Ukraine a $500 billion. They're talking about that would worsen the U.S. budget deficit. The best outcome for this conflict would be a political settlement. But how do you find, at the end of the day, Trump doing this?
Well, Trump's going to have to go with what the realities are on the ground. Doesn't matter what Trump believes. or matters what is. Is there a Ukrainian army left intact? Does Ukraine still hold any positions that they are capable of defending? You know, this won't be an issue for Donald Trump until November 6th, the day after the election, if he wins. But with, you know, the Democrat commitment to cheating and everything, who knows? And with the propaganda of this deep state so firmly against him and trying to kill him, Trump may not prevail. What it does, in a way, it doesn't matter who wins the election. Whoever wins the election is not going to be able to undertake any kind of policy or initiative that's going to change the trajectory for Ukraine. That's the bottom line. What's going to happen to Ukraine is going to be dictated by Russia, not by the United States and not by NATO. Because what we're seeing is, instead of NATO growing stronger, NATO's growing weaker. Instead of NATO becoming more unified and saying, yeah, by God, we got to support Ukraine, they're becoming more divided. That's going to get worse over the next 3 months, not better. So Ukraine is going to be facing the reality of less international support across the board. And, you know, it depends also on what happens in the U.S. Congress. Particularly if the Republicans win, they're going to be going all in for Israel and nothing for Ukraine. And, you know, let's not forget that there's a real possibility that the Israelis are going to do the ultimate act of stupidity and self-immolation by launching an attack, a war into southern Lebanon. They do that, this same way is going to get out of control, one way or the other, out of control. And there will be a regional war at a minimum that may drag in the powers of Russia, China, and the United States.
If they start a new front in Lebanon, how would that affect the conflict in Ukraine, in your opinion?
Oh, it's going to suck the air out of it as far as the Western backing. United States can't fight a two-front war, can't even support a two-front war. So it's going to be compelled to focus on trying to save Israel. I think that was one of the purposes of Netanyahu's visit, that, you know, he showed up here and he was seeking assurance that if they get into trouble and they need outside assistance, that the United States would come riding to its rescue.
Larry, how did you find the objectives of Netanyahu's visit to the United States? He was all talking about Iran, 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 and we were supposed to hear about Hezbollah and attacking Hezbollah. Right now, he's just shifting from Hamas to Hezbollah, right now shifting from Hezbollah to Iran. What he's seeking for, in your opinion?
Well, he wants the United States to go to war with Iran and destroy Iran. That's what he wants. Or he wants at least the assurance that the United States will back him up if he tries it. And again, this is, you know, we're into the realm of delusional thinking, where they, you know, they don't really understand. Nobody in the United States leadership or in Israeli leadership understands the kind of cost that would be forced upon their own countries if they try to engage Iran in this way. Iran's not going to be alone. Iran's already basically got de facto military alliance with Russia and China. And Russia and China are not going to stand by and let the West just attack Iran, particularly when Iran's not doing anything to them. It's Israel that's killing the vast majority of people, not Iran, not Hezbollah, not Hamas. It's Israel. It's Israel murdering civilians en masse, not Hamas, not Hezbollah.
Is the danger of having a nuclear war, is there in that region if something happens?
Very high. I know that Doug McGregor is quite worried that Israel, recognizing it's got such limited military might right now, would use tactical nukes in southern Lebanon as a way to destroy Hezbollah positions. And the thing most people don't understand is those tactical nukes would be 3 to 4 times the size of what was used against Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So it's big, you know, we're talking something big. And if that happens, Pakistan has vowed, has promised to Turkey that it would provide it with nuclear weapons. Turkey may very well feel compelled to go after Israel with nukes. I mean, this thing can really get out of hand quick. And we don't have any kind of adults making decisions either in the United States or in Europe.
Can we say undoubtedly Iran doesn't have nuclear bombs?
I doubt it, but they could, you know, it really shouldn't
take
them.
That would be huge if something happens in that scale. It's unbelievable.
Well, they have to have a nuclear device. They've got the missiles that can carry a nuclear device. They certainly have the scientific and engineering expertise to produce nuclear weapons. But up to this point, there has been there's been sort of prohibited under Islam, that is considered as the term haram, that it's considered something that's not in accordance with the laws and teachings of Allah. So, they may not have developed it, but if confronted with this kind of threat, they very well could turn to it.
And how do you find right now, Bashar al-Assad is in Moscow talking with Putin, and Erdogan gonna be there, and they would talk about their differences. On the other hand, China, as you mentioned before, is bringing these groups together, Palestinian groups. At the same time, you see what's going on in the United States, all about war, and in that region, all about peace and making agreements. The picture is so vivid, Larry.
It's the United States has lost its prestige, its status as a world leader. We're a world bully now. You know, I likened it to, you know, the United States has gone from being this charming suitor, you know, somebody who'll trying to woo a young lady out on a date, you know, bring her flowers and boxes of candy and take her to dinner and to the theater and a good time. We've gone from that to being a guy who basically breaking into houses and raping women. The United States has become the equivalent of an international rapist. We either start a war with some country, try to subvert it through the CIA, or bully it with economic sanctions. Rarely are you seeing the United States out there holding out a carrot, trying to work, win what they call hearts and minds. So the United States is being viewed around the world as a bully. And as such, losing its ability to influence people and make decisions. Which is one of the reasons you saw that Thailand, who has a long time been considered an ally of the United States, turns to the BRICS company and say, hey, China, Russia, we want to join BRICS. Okay, y'all come.
When it comes to Netanyahu and his attitude right now, do you think, you mentioned that he wanted to attack Lebanon, the southern part of Lebanon. But how about Iran? Is he willing to attack Iran as well? Is he going to get any sort of permission from the U.S. government?
Okay, how do they attack Iran? That's what I want to know. I mean, they have carried out and encouraged assassinations of Iranian nuclear scientists. You know, I believe Israel is directly involved with that. But as far as a conventional military attack, Israel could launch some ballistic missiles. Israel could possibly launch a ballistic missile with a nuclear device on it. But they don't have enough nuclear devices to destroy Iran. And if they did that, it would not take Iran long to necessarily develop a nuclear device to retaliate with, particularly since so many of the nuclear sites are buried underground in what they called hardened, deeply buried facilities and mountains, etc. So, you know, Israel, there's nothing Israel can do from conventional military attacks or even nuclear attacks that would keep it safe and guarantee that Iran would not strike back. But Iran's got other options. You know, I'm sure they're going to up on, you know, provide more arms to the Houthis so that the Houthis can launch more strikes in Israel. And, you know, Iran is already in talks with Turkey to try to set aside their differences. And Turkey's in talk with Syria to set aside their differences. And all that's being facilitated by Russia and China. So this is, we're seeing Russia and China exercise some adult leadership in the region. And I wouldn't be surprised that one of the topics that Bashar al-Assad and Putin talked about was getting rid of U.S. forces that are currently occupying Western or Eastern Syria. It's a violation of their sovereignty and it's a violation of international law. U.S. should not be there.
In the Congress, Kamala Harris wasn't present. And right after that, met with Netanyahu. Do you understand what's the reason behind this kind of behavior on her part?
She's trying to piss off everybody. So on the one hand, by not going to the speech, she's angering all the Jews who are strong supporters of Israel. But then afterwards, when she meets with Netanyahu, she supposedly reads him a riot act and then comes out and, you know, trashes him in public. Well, then that pisses off those Jewish Americans who were pro-Israel. So, you know, she's not making anybody happy because whatever goodwill she bought among the Palestinian and those who support the Palestinian cause by not going to the speech, she lost it in terms of her, you know, meeting with Netanyahu. So, you know, she's trying to have it both ways, and you can't have it both ways.
And after all, how did you find the outcome of this visit of Netanyahu to the United States?
I think it was sickening and disgusting myself. The display he put on in Congress, and the only thing that matched the sickening, disgusting display was how the Republicans, by and large, responded, as long with some of the Democrats. You know, the wild applause for just, you know, immoral policy and lies, lie after lie after lie, and wildly applauded his truth. You like to get reiterate the babies were beheaded and burned alive and incinerated in ovens. You know, the only babies killed that day were killed by Israeli military, not by Hamas. But, you know, nobody, again, this wasn't about dealing with facts. This was about trying to come up with an emotional footage that can be used to justify going to war with Hezbollah and ultimately Iran. That's what they're hoping to do. Part of me says, go for it, guys, because the sooner they do it, the sooner they lose, and the sooner this whole, you know, conflict's going to come to an end.
J.D. Vance wasn't present as well. And how do you find his policy toward Netanyahu? Why he didn't go there?
I don't know. He could argue that he was out on the campaign trail without making it a direct attack. I don't see the Trump campaign doing anything to necessarily distance itself from Netanyahu. If you saw Trump, you know, he supposedly was pissed off at Netanyahu, didn't want to, you know, was angry with him. Oh, Trump couldn't have been more gracious and, well, Bibi, my buddy, come on in. You know, gives the wife a kiss on his cheek. It's just like, you know, old home week. And they're shaking hands and smiling for the camera. Maybe in private, Trump told him, you need to find a negotiated way out of this because we're not going to be able to support you all the way. Yeah, I'd hope that's what he'd said, but I doubt it. I think Trump probably was all on board with BB's. Yeah, you got to end this threat. You got to kill some of them. And if we get elected, we'll back you up.
I think part of this whole thing that Netanyahu was trying to do in the United States, just to convince Israelis that he's so popular in the United States, yeah, that they have to get behind him and support him.
Mission accomplished. You know, Bibi's probably right now more popular and has stronger standing in Israel than ever before. Think about that, with all the debacles that have characterized his government.
But how about, Larry, do you think that with what China is doing and what Russia is doing, do you think that, as you mentioned about Donald Trump, just talking with, maybe talking with Netanyahu about this conflict in Gaza, do you think that Trump has some sort of tendency toward any sort of agreement between, because these superpowers can communicate with each other,
yeah.
and how
well,
that
they should
would
they
benefit?
should communicate they should communicate with each other, but they don't necessarily always do.
How would that benefit the situation of Gaza?
Well, the biggest, I mean, the control over what happens in Gaza hinges upon if the U.S. keeps aid flowing to Israel, period. The United States has enormous leverage over Israel, both through the economic and military aid it provides. So if that's cut off, suspended, halted, interdicted, then it can put Israel in a position where they're going to have to pay attention to Washington. So far, they've gotten everything they want and need. Except manpower, and the United States isn't about to invest manpower into Israel and Gaza and the West Bank. But you know, I think, you know, Netanyahu, he was able to show that he's got at least the firm support of the Republicans and enough Democrats on the Senate side that Israel's aid pipeline is open and secure. That's what he had to deliver. I think he did.
And Netanyahu, when he was talking to Congress, he said that the United States, Israel, and our Arab friends. Who are these Arab friends? He's talking about Jordan and
Egypt,
or he's talking about Saudi Arabia and UAE as well?
Well, Jordan, Egypt at a minimum, maybe Saudi Arabia and the UAE, yeah, and Qatar.
But does he really think that if something happens between Israel and Iran, they would help Israel? Because we know that MBN, Mohammed bin Salman, is not willing to have any sort of conflict right now. And they're not, the conflict and war is totally against his purpose, his goal for Saudi Arabia. That's why I do think that he's not willing to have any sort of conflict with Iran.
Yeah, maybe. You know, that's one of the reasons a motivating factor for Saudi Arabia's willingness to accept China's intervention to bring the Saudis together with Iran is at least help settle one source of conflict in the region anyway. Not fully, but because the Saudis are still going at it with the Houthis, and that's still a bit of a proxy fight because of Iran's support for the Houthis.
And how about Turkey? Is Turkey going to be helping Israel? Or?
Oh, no. Helping Israel do what? Kill more Palestinians?
No, no. Against Iran.
Yeah, same. They're not going to back Israel in an attack on Iran at all. If anything, they would be more likely to come to Iran's assistance. So yeah, it'd be very foolish of Israel to launch an attack on Iran, particularly one unprovoked. Now Israel claim, oh, they provide support to Hamas and Hezbollah. Well, they're providing support to an oppressed people that are being illegally attacked by the government of Israel and murdered on a mass scale, civilians. They could fully justify it as self-defense for coming to the aid of a person whose life is at risk.
What Russia and China are doing with the various groups in Gaza, these Palestinian groups like Hamas, Fatah, and these groups, I'm talking about these groups.
Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, Islamic Jihad. I mean, yeah. There are 14 of them. Right.
Exactly. They're getting to the point that two-state solution would be a good position, would be a good direction for the conflict. But how would that be perceived by Netanyahu and his administration?
They're not going to accept it. The entire reason Mossad supported Hamas in its early days of creation. Mossad, Israel, did not create Hamas. Hamas was a genuine creation. But Israel rapidly learned that it could provide money and funding to strengthen Hamas as a counterweight to PLO and Fatah. And why? Because they wanted to sabotage any attempt to come up with a two-state solution. And wanted to sabotage any attempt to actually get negotiations on that front. So that's why they did it. Now that they're coming together and there's not an outside force driving them apart, they may be in actually stronger position to work together and come up with a genuine Palestinian government, which reflects the will of the Palestinian people.
We've learned that the government in the United Kingdom drops its challenge to ICC arrest warrant for Israeli leaders. And it seems that they're backing off. They're just getting that they're just supporting ICC against Israel. And are they trying to put some political pressure on Netanyahu?
Oh, I'm sure they are. I mean, that will play well in Britain. But, you know, Netanyahu doesn't have to land in the United Kingdom, so he's fine. And the United Kingdom is not going to put up interceptors to bring down his plane, even though they did this. The Western countries did that to Evo Morales, who was president of Bolivia, when they thought they were trying to capture Edward Snowden. So maybe if we told him that Netanyahu was smuggling Edward Snowden on his plane, then maybe some countries would intercept him, bring him down, and put Bibi under arrest. But that's not going to happen.
And you mean that Europe doesn't matter for Netanyahu and what he's doing?
I don't think it does. I mean, you know, he's, you know, the warrant's out there, but he's traveling freely, gets into the United States. He's not going to go someplace where the warrant could be enforced. Doesn't need to. And it hasn't led to the United States saying, oh, because you got that warrant, we can't send you aid. So the United States can continue sending the aid it can. It's just the problem that Netanyahu has is the ability of the United States to produce ammunition and produce those things is limited. You know, he thought we were the, you know, 10 feet tall and big and strong. And it turns out we're actually about 4'5" and skinny.
Yeah. Just to wrap up this session, Larry, it seems that at the end of the day, it's the United States that has to decide about what's going on in Gaza, because the only country that has some sort of leverage on Netanyahu and his administration is the United States. And how we can get it, in your opinion, if any of these candidates, Kamala Harris or Donald Trump, wins the election, how we can get some sort of political settlement?
Well, they have to set up a specific activity that is going to support Hamas. I mean, that's the problem here is the Israeli settlers are out of control. They are convinced that they get to control all of the West Bank, that it's their land. They've had it for 3,000 years, yada, yada, yada. And they're interlopers. They're thieves. And they need to be driven out. But, you know, I think the only way they're going to get driven out is going to be through a war. And that war will get started if Israel invades southern Lebanon. If they do that, then I think we're going to see a fairly quick escalation in that war, and it would be out of control, at least out of the control of the Israelis.